I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on Legislative Operations and Reform. Tell you a little bit about what our purpose is this morning. We have been given temporarily Senate Bill 5522, which is a Ways and Means bill. It's a legislative budget bill. We have been asked by the Senate President to make recommendations to Ways and Means in terms of appropriate appropriations for legislative fiscal office, revenue office, legislative council, legislative administration, and so on. What we will do after this Wednesday and next Wednesday is prepare a letter of recommendations, which will then go with the Ways and Means Bill 5522 down to Ways and Means. We are not allowed to actually amend the bill, but we'll send it along with a letter and some rather firm recommendations. So with that, Margie, anything before I call on Mr. Henderson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll just note that at your place you do have a set of questions that we pose to each one of the offices, and that's generally what they'll be responding to in their comments.
And we have also sent a memorandum to every member of the Senate asking them for their recommendations.
And every member of the House, and we have started to receive responses from the legislators to those questions, which
Very
we'll
good.
Hear about next Wednesday.
Very good. Mr. Henderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, staff, for the record, I'm Dave Henderson, legislative administrator, and you should have a copy of my prepared responses to the questions that were posed for legislative administration. It looks like this. So I will just briefly, I won't read this, but I'll just briefly go through the questions and share that information with you. The first question was, under the proposed session structure, do you need additional staff? If so, how many and in what positions? Until we know a little bit more about the structure of the special session, it's a little difficult to answer that. I can give you some general guidelines that that may direct you. If the committee structure continues into the interim and into the special session as it exists right now, it would be very difficult for us to meet the staffing needs with the positions that we have in our budget for the interim. We have about 8 committee administrator positions that are continuing positions, and I believe it's 6 committee assistant positions that are continuing, and then we supplement during a session, and we hire somewhere between a dozen and 15 session committee administrators and a like number of committee assistants. If we are going to have an active interim with a lot of committees meeting, it may be that we would need supplemental staff to go to add to the continuing staff that we do have. If we break down to a more typical interim kind of schedule, we may be able to handle that with our existing continuing positions, but we'll need a little bit more information before we'll know the answer to that. In our information systems operation, to provide the kind of support for members, PCs, staff PCs, and all of the other devices that members bring in for a session, we could not maintain that level of support with our continuing staff. We normally hire 3 session PC techs and 3 media assistants. So it's likely that if we're going to provide full coverage and have members get the prompt service that they get right now, we would need additional staff in information systems for the special session. Facility services, it's a little bit hard to say, again, depending on the structure. We think we may be able to cover that with our existing continuing staff positions, but it may be necessary to bring in an additional custodian or some additional people to do the bill distribution in the morning, but that's something that we could probably handle within our existing budget. The second question was, are your staff salaries competitive with comparable positions in the public sector? We monitor this on a regular basis because we are constantly recruiting, and we know from those recruitments whether or not we're competitive. I would have to say that right now, For the most part, we are competitive with other public sector employers in what we consider our recruitment basin, which runs basically from Portland south to Eugene. We have not had any recruitments recently that I can think of where we didn't get an adequate number of applicants to hire at the posted range that we were advertising at. We do have three or four reclassification requests in as option packages, because we have identified a couple of positions that really need to be classed at a higher level than they are right now, and we have those in our budget as option packages. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we worked with the other offices to conduct a local government salary survey on a number of positions throughout the legislative branch in the last about 8 or 10 months, and that did identify some positions where we are not at market. At this point, there are no option packages to get our positions to market, so we're kind of waiting to see what we do with that. Do you have adequate office space, and if not, what are your additional needs? We are fine for our existing staff, and we have in our budget request, we're asking for 3 additional positions, and we have adequate space to house those folks. Again, that's going to depend a lot on where we go and some of the bills that are in, for instance, to create the audit function in the legislative fiscal office. We may need to be finding more space in the building for staff in fiscal and council. But as far as legislative administration, we're just fine on our existing space. Training and professional development, what have we spent and what do we expect to spend? In this current biennium, we spent approximately $177,000, and that is, there are certain positions that obviously require a lot more. We're going through a major transition program in information systems right now that has required a lot of training, as the information technology staff have to learn new tools as far as hardware and software. So a lot of that training has gone in there. We would anticipate in the next biennium that our spending would be comparable, maybe slightly higher. We're fine on our budget figure for training and development. I don't see any need, and we don't see any need that we would have to add any additional money for training and professional development. The next question is about the Capitol Wings renovation project, and there's a somewhat extensive response in my written document. There is also an attachment that looks like this. It's a letter, and the letterhead is Architects 4. This is a letter that was provided to us by Darwin Doss, who is the architect on the Wings renovation project. You'll see that this letter was dated January of 2002. It outlines a number of the health and safety issues that are confronting us in the wings, from inadequate plumbing to inadequate electrical wiring. Our computer cabling is not installed to code. Our fire suppression system is not to code as it exists right now. All of these health and safety issues drove us clear back in about 1999 or 2000 to begin to develop our original proposal to go in and do a complete health and safety revamp of the wings to address all of those issues. Funding for that was approved in the 2001 session of the legislature. At that time, the cost of the entire project was about $16.9 million. We planned it in phases. The first phase was to be the upgrade in the hearing rooms A through F and the Galleria and the Capitol Gift Shop. The reason we did that was to prepare those spaces so that when we moved into the wings, we would be able to use the hearing rooms as temporary staff space to move people out of the wings and into those hearing rooms. That work was completed following the special sessions in 2002, and it was done on time and within budget so that everything was ready for the 2003 regular session of the legislature. At that time, the final e-board prior to the 2003 session, the legislative leadership then decided that because of the declining revenue picture, it would not be prudent to proceed with the renovation of the wings themselves. So that project was put on hold. When the Speaker and the President, following the 2005 session, appointed membership to the Public Commission on the Oregon Legislature, there was a Facilities Committee that was created within the commission that looked at the original proposal on doing the health and safety upgrades for the wings, and unanimously approved moving forward with that project. And that went up to the full commission, which again unanimously approved proceeding with the work. At that time, we brought the architect back in to look at the plans, update them to a certain extent to reflect the current building code. There are code changes that have gone into place since the original plan was developed. So the architect has done some of that work to update the plans. At this point, the estimate from the architect is that the cost to complete the project would be $28 million, approximately, a little bit more than that. Then there's about $2.8 million of other work that is outside the scope of the upgrade, but that needs to be done. The elevators in the wings are no longer to code. The motors and the controls in the elevator wings, they're perfectly safe, but the codes have been upgraded, and it is time to replace those motors. In fact, one motor did burn out a couple of years ago, and we had to do some pretty extensive work on that one. So there's about $2.8 million outside of the work that was originally planned in the project, bringing the total to about $32 million that we would estimate right now. We have met a number of times with the legislative leadership about this project, and the questions that have been asked have been, if we proceed, how long will it take to complete the project? Our architect estimates that it will be approximately 2 years from the time that we give them the green light to the time that it would be ready for people to move back in. So if we were to green light this project today, the move-in date would be approximately mid-March of 2009. A question was raised about whether or not steps could be taken to move that move-in date up. Could we run additional shifts? Could we do some of the work so that the wings would be ready for occupancy prior to the 2009 session? Our architect has told us that he thinks it might be possible, but without input from a contractor who would be doing the work, it's not possible to say for certain. So we have begun discussions with a contractor right now to try to get an answer to that question as to whether we could move up the move-in date so that the wings would be occupied again prior to the 2009 session. The danger of that, just right up front, you need to know, is that the risk would increase because running two shifts, if you've got a project manager, you almost have to have two project managers because you've got to have one here for each shift, and the cost in all likelihood would increase. We don't know how much. Again, that's something that we need input from the contractor before we could answer that question definitively. But we're working on that right now to try to have that answer. And we do have a meeting scheduled with the legislative leadership next week to review where we are on that project. Next question, please explain the timeline, cost, and funding for other renovation projects, including the old building and seismic upgrades. There is extensive work that is needed in the old portion of the Capitol, as Senator Atkinson is well aware. We do have an option package in our requested budget for $500,000. The purpose of that is to hire a historic architect and engineers to come in and do the kind of preliminary work that was done on the wings several years ago, start that work on the old portion of the building so that as we are doing the construction in the wings, we would be studying the old portion of the building to develop the kind of plans that we would need to move forward. At this point, it's impossible to estimate how much that would cost. Just not having those professionals in here to look at things, we really have no idea. It could be another $30 million project. It could be a $50 million project. We frankly don't know. And until we get the architects and engineers in to look, we would be hard-pressed to put any kind of parameters around that. The seismic upgrade, following the spring break quake in 1993, the engineers who did the work on the rotunda, which is the part that we came in and actually did a seismic upgrade in the rotunda to the point that it's now, in the event of an earthquake, probably the safest place in the building. That engineer did a study of the entire building and came back with a figure at that time that to do all of the seismic upgrades that are needed, it would be approximately $90 million. Now, that was 1993 and 1994 when that study was done, so obviously those figures are outdated. But the work that would be required now is still the same as the work that would have been required then, starting with base isolation, which basically takes the building and puts it on shock absorbers. And then there's matters of securing marble to the walls in a way that is seismically appropriate, which it is not at this point. So 13 years ago, the figure was $90 million. What it would be today is hard to say. Committee staffing and how to address this issue into the future. There was a lot of work that was done in the Public Commission in one of the subcommittees looking at the staff structure within legislative administration for staffing of standing committees. There was a lot of interest in an approach of having an independent research office, and there is a piece of legislation in right now to create that research office. Again, until we know the direction that you want to go, as the policy setters, it's a little bit difficult to say. We've developed some alternative methods for staffing that would be from leaving staffing as it is to some sort of blended approach of research staff and the existing staff to having a totally independent research office. And with your direction, we'd be happy to proceed with developing those further. I do have Rick Berkobian, who is the committee services manager, who is working on that here with me today. If you have any specific questions, I know he'd be happy to come up and respond to those. We did have a study that was conducted by the National Conference of State Legislatures. It was done at the conclusion of the 05 session and into the 05-06 interim, and they did an assessment of the current staffing model that we have, and we have implemented several of the suggestions that came out of that study, and we could certainly get a copy of that for the committee members if they would like to see that. Final question, what is the cost of instituting background checks for all legislative employees, some employees, and what policy decisions need to be made? We prepared a draft background check policy in the last interim, and it was based on the judicial branch background check policy. In fact, it's almost verbatim their policy. We've not implemented it at this point. We've shared some of the information with the presiding officers. The cost ranges from as low as about $35 per check up to as high as about $500 per background check. Some of the policy decisions that would have to be made, the judicial branch policy is that background checks are not done on all applicants. They're only done when you've narrowed it down to one finalist for a position. Then the background check is made. The information is shared with the appointing authority, who then has the discretion of deciding whether anything that shows up in the background check would disqualify the applicant for the position. For instance, if we were to be hiring someone to work in our financial services office we discovered that 4 years ago they had a conviction for embezzlement or something like that, that would probably warrant not proceeding with that hire. Yeah. But let's say they had some kind of misdemeanor conviction 12 years ago that had nothing to do with how money is handled. Then the appointing authority would have the discretion of saying that's not a disqualifying factor in making this decision. We did run the draft policy by the attorneys in the labor relations section at the Department of Justice. They generally gave us a green light on the policy. They've raised a couple of issues that would need to be addressed by probably the Legislative Administration Committee. We have branch-wide personnel rules for the entire legislative branch that are adopted by the Legislative Administration Committee, and then by reference, the other appointing authorities in the legislative branch adopt those policies. So it would probably be LAC that would be tasked with making a decision on whether to proceed. One of the questions is, do you do the check on all potential employees, or do you identify specific positions that may warrant a check as opposed to other positions that don't? Generally, the Department of Justice said that you probably want to do it on all employees, because if you had one position on which you did that and made a hiring decision, but another position where you didn't do a background check and made a different hiring decision, the person who was checked and not hired might have a cause of action, because somebody who wasn't checked and was hired would be perceived as having some sort of advantage. Those were the questions relating to legislative administration and my brief responses. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Questions, Senator Walkin. Senator Atkinson, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Dave. Couple of questions. First question is a bit of housekeeping. In about 6 weeks, I think I'm giving a historical tour for a bunch of architects through the American Institute of Architects. And could I have you or Herb's help with that?
Chair Monroe, Senator Atkinson, we would be very happy to participate in that.
I think that might be helpful in helping us with the old building. Comment. My biggest fear is that on all this is that I think I'm an optimist, and I think that we've got an opportunity to get this through. I mean, I think that we've got interest in the building and whatnot. But the thing that has got me concerned is that the legislative branch is supposed to be, by design, difficult and slow and hard to get things through. And so now it's taken 30 years for us to do this at great expense. My fear is if we don't do the old building properly, or at least make a step in it, it's going to be another 30 years before we do anything. Certainly the seismic, asbestos, pipes, my beloved stairwells. Is there, on things that are noticeable, that we can give ownership not only to the legislative members, all the 90 who are serving now, but for the next 10 sessions, is there anything that we can write into this bill that can get something done on the old building and have people see the work now? I'm concerned about spending $500,000 on a study that a future legislature won't fix.
Chair Monroe, Senator Atkinson, I as far as I know, and I guess I would want to consult with the fiscal office, but this legislature has the authority to direct whatever upgrading work needs to be done and appropriating the money to do that. So if that was to be built into this budget bill, then we would certainly proceed with that. We do need to come in and do the study to know exactly what we're facing. We've got a good idea, and if I've got Herb Colom here, the facilities manager, he could address some of those issues right now if you would like. But certainly you do have the authority to authorize proceeding with the entire project, of both sides of the building, if you will.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Could we have Herb come describe a few things of the old building? I think that would be helpful.
Good morning, Chair, board members. For the record, Herb Cole, I'm Facility Services Manager. There are several things that you've noticed that need to be done in the old building. The opening up the skylights and rehabbing the brass would be the things that would, I think, stand out the most for someone just walking into the building. But the reason we need to get the architects in here is to look at it from the infrastructure out for us, how to get the old building converted to a modern office structure. But maintain the old fabric, be able to support the offices that are in the building now in the way they need to be supported with the electronics and other facilities that were never imagined when the building was constructed, and get those incorporated and get the fire protection and those type of issues upgraded accordingly. The reason for trying to do the study and then do the work would be to make sure we weren't doing things twice. I wouldn't want to try and take care of some of the cosmetic issues and then realize that I would have to go in and take those out to fix something that was behind that particular area.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Chair. The quality of the water in this building, Dave, every morning when I turn on the spigot in the restroom, it looks about the color of your desk. Is it potable? Safe?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Morse, we have had the water tested because, yes, it does look awful. And it is safe according to the qualified people who have done the testing. The problem is that the pipe is corroding from the inside out, and I could have brought samples of pipe. I don't know if you've all seen them, but the corrosion is very evident when you look at it. And we have the seams in the pipe are failing. So on a periodic basis, we'll have to go in and replace a piece of pipe this long or this long. At this point, we've not had any catastrophic failure, but we have certainly had places where it has leaked and caused problems. There is a new process which we have just learned about, and we're having the contractor look into that, perhaps would not require total replacement of the pipe, but it's a process where they go in and basically sandblast the pipe from the inside, clearing out the corrosion, and then they go back in with a product to seal the pipe. So we are having our contractor look into whether that would be a feasible approach here. If it is, that could certainly have an impact on any of the work in the building, because then suddenly you're not having to tear out a lot of the walls that right now, if we're going to do a total replacement of the plumbing, it would require tearing out a lot of walls. So that's one option that we're hopeful that it might prove an approach that we could take. But the water is safe to drink, but as you know, just look behind you, there's bottled water everywhere in the building because it's not something that people want to do. We also have a custodian come in on Sunday evenings and flush the pipes to make it better, but obviously it still isn't good.
Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
I'm relentless because I want to do this, and I want to do all three components. I want the outside to be fixed. I want the wings to be done, and I want those stairwells fixed. I want them fixed. I want them fixed right now, because it can be done. It's just disgusting, and I think that this committee, if we do this bill, we should write in getting those things fixed. I know they're cosmetic, but they're a big part of the love of the old building, and we should do it. Because if I'm telling you, if we don't do it right now, it's not going to get done.
Senator Atkinson, we have a bill, Marjorie, that has just been assigned to our committee. Is that right?
Several bills. One that addresses the stairwells, and there are a couple others that
I believe
have to
that's
deal with
my
the
bill.
Capital. I believe it is capital wing renovation.
And we will be scheduling those bills soon.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your input. And hope everybody will kind of hold with me. I'm not a well person this morning, so if I were still teaching school, there would be a substitute. But they don't have substitute senators. I don't understand why. Mr. Rocco.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. As with Mr. Henderson, we were asked to respond to a series of questions, and I have provided you with a written response, and I'll go over that very briefly with you. Our first question was, under the proposed session structure, do you need additional staff? And if so, how many and which positions? Given what we've heard about the the retimed session and the February session, at this time, we don't think we would need additional positions, and there's a couple basic reasons for that. First, we've been through special sessions before. In 2002, we went through five of them with just current staff, and so we think, given that this is a pilot, we would just try to go through this and see if existing staff would work. And the other difficulty is that it's hard, given the nature of legislative fiscal work, to hire somebody for a on a limited duration basis for 3 or 4 months. So we don't see where we would necessarily need at this time to hire somebody for a full 24-month period just because of a spike in work in February, next February. We do think, however, that after this pilot is over, that all of the offices that you're going to talk to today excuse me, should reassess their needs after we see what it's like, what the workload is like, and how many bills go through the process. One thing I'd like to point out with respect to additional staff is we are looking at perhaps bringing a proposal to the presiding officers to add a technology position in legislative fiscal. We found over the past couple of years that the number of technology projects that are being proposed by agencies that come through the Joint Legislative Information Management and Technology Committee have increased rather dramatically, and we're not geared up really to address all of the fiscal issues of that. We don't necessarily have an expert on staff that knows about technology systems. So we're looking into that possibility for this session. The second question we were asked was, are your staff salaries competitive with comparable positions in the public sector? It's given the nature of LFO's work, it's we're somewhat unique. And it's difficult to find public, in the private sector, it's difficult to find comparable. What we've tried to do in the public sector is match up with state agency directors of mid-size agencies and deputy directors of larger agencies, because those agencies tend to try to recruit our staff because of their knowledge and expertise of the process. And the last time we did a real in-depth review of that comparability to that level in the executive branch was several years ago. And we think that there may be a need to re-look at that situation right now. Last interim, we lost two people from LFO that eventually ended up in agencies at basically a deputy director level, and we know of several others that were actively being recruited that we sort of fought them off, and those people are still on staff, but it is an issue that we need to look at. We were asked if we have adequate office space, and if not, what are our needs. The current space is sufficient for the staff that we have. However, we're just about maxed out. So in that technology position I was mentioning, we were discussing with legislative revenue of sharing the responsibilities of that position between the two offices. So we would have to find some space for that person, and whether it would be housed in legislative revenue or in our office, we would have to work something out, because right now we have we've built to the walls in our current space. We were asked with regard to training and professional development and travel, how much did your agency spend, and what do you project, and what types of activities do staff participate in? We expect to spend about $20,000 on training and professional development and travel during this current biennium. this is a little lower than normal, and it's because a lot of the activities that our staff participate in occur in the summer months, and last session, the session extended into August, which prohibited us from making some of these annual meetings of national legislative organizations. Typically, the types of training we do are either the national legislative organizations, or such as NCSL or the Western Legislative Fiscal Officers Association, or if staff find another professional meeting that's going on in their program area, because our staff are assigned specific program areas, that they may participate in those type meetings. We were asked about legislative discussion surrounding program evaluation and auditing, and a staff structure to do that. We still are unclear exactly what is being requested in that kind of a structure. We did some work last session on a bill that was proposed for to set up a legislative audit function. And at that time, I think we proposed a structure of a manager, several support staff, and about 12 auditors, with a cost of about $3 to $4 million. So I guess it just depends on how much auditing work the legislature would like done, and once that's determined, we could, we could create a structure that would fit in with that amount of work. Our current structure allows us to do limited numbers of program evaluations through the Joint Legislative Audit Committee each interim, and we work with that committee to decide what type of work they're looking for, and then conduct a couple program evaluations. We're also planning in the next interim coming up to start doing auditing of agency performance measured data that is submitted, and we're going to do that with our current existing staff. We were asked about suggestions to modify the budget process to make it more workable with respect to the assembly's budget. We've been looking at one issue, which is in regards to the split between interim and session, and we've been working with the leadership offices to address that issue. We are looking at some ways to provide additional information to the presiding officers to get them more involved in getting information about the budget earlier in the process. And in addition, we've attached a couple of memos that you had asked at the last meeting we attended to our response today, and I think they had been previously sent to you. One is on Legislative Council drafting services and charging agencies, and then the rent rate that is currently charged by Legislative Administration for space. And finally, you ask us about the advantages and disadvantages of merging LFO and legislative revenue, and I guess it depends on what the perceived problem is right now. We think that the offices tend to work fairly well as they are structured right now. In the past there's been a well-defined split in responsibilities between the two offices. We coordinate on fiscal statements and revenue statements, because on certain revenue items like fees, we generally take care of in a fiscal statement, and LRO usually takes care of the tax side of things, and so we have to coordinate with them to find out if they're going to issue a revenue statement, so that we don't issue a fiscal statement with a revenue discussion if they're going to issue a revenue statement. We also coordinate on revenue information coming out of the forecast, so that they can give us their spin on the numbers, so that when we bill the budget, that we know that they're in agreement with the numbers coming out of the executive branch, and then we rely on their revenue estimates for the close of session estimate, which is really what the final legislative budget is based on. So, do you have any questions?
Questions for Mr. Rocco? Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. Now we'll hear from Ann Boss.
Good morning, Chair Monroe, and Boss, Legislative Council. I have prepared a written response to several questions that you asked of me after the last hearing, and I've also provided some statistical information that Marjorie requested in a subsequent email. So just to direct your attention to the attachments, Exhibit A is a comparison of DOJ and Legislative Council attorney salaries. Exhibit B is a summary of recommended changes on attorney salaries that are derived from a survey by Employee Services with DAS in August 2006. Exhibit C is a report of the number of bills requested by each member of the House and each member of the Senate without naming the members, and the percentage of bills that were introduced by each of those members. And at the top of the Exhibit C is are the totals of House requests, Senate requests, and committee requests, and agency requests. And the last exhibit, Exhibit D, are bill drafting statistics comparing. This is the drafting that we do for non-legislators, for state agencies and elected officials. And it shows the number of requests for the last three sessions and the income that has been generated by virtue of those drafting requests. So I will now go back to our written responses, and I'll refer to the exhibits as I go through the answers. The first question you asked is under the proposed session if we need additional staff. What I would like to point out is two assumptions that I'm making that are very important. Because when I testified at PCAL and we were talking about annual sessions, I said I would need 4 to 6 new attorney positions and probably 5 editor positions, really doubling our staff if we went to true annual sessions. But under the hypothetical that you proposed to me, and as is set out in SCR 1, it's really more of a special session where, number one, we won't be drafting agency bills, and number two, I am assuming that there won't be a post-session publication that we'll be compiling and editing. So while it may affect somewhat our ability to get caught up and stay current on Oregon Administrative Rule Review, I believe that with the addition of 2 copy editors that we would not need any further additional staff to go through this pilot session. As you know, we just hired 7 new drafters, which is just about half of our drafting staff, and that has put pressure on us this session because, number one, each senior deputy was assigned to mentor a specific new drafter and train a specific new drafter. So we had 3 weeks of training and mentoring, and that took place from July, August through about September, October. And secondly, the copy editors who review every draft that we prepare twice. The addition of the new attorneys, and this is with due respect to their talent and ability as lawyers and their knowledge in their substantive areas, it takes more time to copy edit a draft for a that's done by a new attorney who's in their first session as opposed to a senior experienced attorney. So I really can't convey to you in words the effect that it has had on our office to have half of the attorneys replaced, some of them senior attorneys replaced by new attorneys. And so it's hard to say if the incredible workload that our copy editors have had this session is solely attributable to that, or if it's due to other factors. And I need the next pilot session to help me determine that, and I anticipate that each session that if we are able to keep these new drafters, that they will get better and better. But again, I am asking for two copy editor positions. The second question you asked was whether Legislative Council's staff salaries are competitive with comparable positions, and you were focusing at the last hearing on our attorney salaries. If you look at Exhibit A, Senator Morse, I think you asked me to provide comparison with Department of Justice. And if you look at the comparison with Deputy Legislative Counsel, which is our starting level, it's fairly comparable. In fact, it's about 6% above what Assistant Attorneys General start out at and go up to. The big difference is in Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel and Senior Assistant Attorney General, because you'll see that they're actually classified on the DAS classification and compensation system at a higher classification, and the difference in the salary is 17% per step. And it goes up again. Their salaries go up to over $100,000 a year for deputies. On Exhibit B is the results of a salary survey that was done by Employee Services with DAS, the DAS specialists in classification and compensation. And they looked at comps in the public sector and determined that for deputies that Legislative Council salaries are 15% low, and for senior deputies 10% lower than the comparators. I am not prepared to testify on the methodology that was used. Lori Christopher could do that. And at this time, Lori Christopher and DAS are looking into the copy editor positions, and I think what we will find is something similar to what was testified to by Ken Rocco, in that it's very difficult to find comparators for our copy editors. Our copy editors apply conventions that hundreds or thousands of conventions that are contained in several volumes of books. It's not grammar and just the form that is looked at. They know everything about relating clauses, different types of appropriations, and all the other conventions that have to be there. And so if there's not really a position in state government that's comparable to that, and that's hard to predict with certainty. We are going to be working with Teresa McHugh, an LFO, and actually Teresa is here today. We haven't requested a additional attorney positions or a salary increase at this time, but we're going to be working with her based on this information. You asked if we have adequate office space. For those of you who've been to our office, we literally are using every single square inch of space. We have two attorneys who are in cubicles, and we just used our changed our lunchroom into an office. We didn't tell the attorney moving in there that that was our lunchroom, but we moved the refrigerator out, and there's no question that we're just at the outer limits of what we can do. So Dave Henderson knows we need additional space. I think everyone knows we need additional space. And the issue is, where is it? You asked how much is devoted to professional development and travel. Our budget for 2005-07 and 2007-09 is $37,800. That's around $500 per continuing FTE per year. Our current expenditures for this biennium are just under $17,000. One of the issues is, of course, during session, we're not able to travel to do any kind of out-of-state activity. And I would like to see more of our staff going to the NCSL trainings, because that's the one place where they can hear from experts in our specific field, which is other legislatures who have the same kind of jobs that we do. And I think that that would be a morale booster, as well as something that could improve the quality of our work. You asked about the staff time devoted to the Law Commission. I believe that I told you when I was here last time that I estimated the number of staff hours this time was higher than it's been before. I think around 2.5 FTE over the interim up until the time of when session started was devoted to attending Law Commission meetings and drafting for the Law Commission. And while I'm, of course, neutral on the issue of time devoted, I just want to see all of our work get done well and in high quality. No one can dispute the fact that the Law Commission does great work, and law improvement is a good thing. So, and the more law is improved, the better and easier our jobs are when we come around to amending the law or adding to it. So I present that to you as a fact of where our resources are going. The next question is, how many hours do you draft bills for executive and judicial branch patrons? This is the question that is answered by reference to Exhibit C If you take a look at Exhibit C, 744 bills requested, 576 introduced, are 77% of the bills that we drafted, compared with the House at 1,635 and the Senate at 1,008. Interim committees 174, and then Senate committees 35 and 48 respectively. And another statistic you may be interested in is the session amendments. The total that we have done so far is 733, and that's higher than in prior sessions so far. I think that's one of the issues that was coming up during the deadline period, was the need for us to do amendments quickly and turn around. But we were able to get, I think that we were able, with the help and the patience of the committee chairs and the members, to balance out so that we met those needs the best of our ability.
Question, Senator Acker.
Ann, we charge, this is really great work, we charge $80 an hour. Remind me, what does the Attorney General charge?
$117 an hour, but our hourly rate is a blended rate. We charge the same rate for copy editor work and publication work as we do for attorney time. And so that's how that rate was arrived at about two sessions ago. We've had the ability to bill by statute for years, and it was decided to begin to bill agencies for the work that we do for them in order to reduce the workload somewhat, and also in the hope that it would increase the quality of the information that we receive so we could do the drafts more quickly. And I think history has revealed that it has not reduced the number of drafts, and it has not really significantly affected the quality of what we get. And Teresa McHugh has suggested that we have a continuing meeting with DAS and the governor's office and some agency heads to attempt to work on this issue. There's two things I would like to see come out of these discussions. And this was my first session. And what the two problems I saw are were, one, that our deadline for receiving information is July 14th, and the deadline for the agencies to introduce bills is December the 1st. It may be the 15th, but we've stopped drafting December the 1st. And there was a big delay in information from, and a lot of it was due to task forces that were in place that were not completing all their meetings until October, November. So what we need to do is tell the agencies well in advance, and that's what we intend to do, that we need to get that information in by the 14th period. And secondly was the number of placeholders. So and possibly changing the deadline and moving it up to November 1st so we could help work on pre-session drafts earlier. Yes. So those are all things that we're looking at for improving.
Okay. We are going to have a discussion about legislative council, your whole operation, and how we can help you to help us.
I have a lot of ideas.
Good. We'll have you back. Anything further? We have one more presenter, and we only have about 12 minutes left.
Just very quickly, okay. Mr. Chairman, I think the most important part of your, one of the most important parts of your testimony is your last paragraph, the last sentence is, the real problem is not agency requests. The real problem is the huge flood of requests that come in during the last week before the deadline, which I think gives pause to think about how we manage regular sessions, and then particularly how are we going to manage the special session. And I suspect, Mr. President, that we will be having those discussions, or certainly leadership has been thinking about that.
Mr. Chair, I would say that this is really, for the conversation I think we had a month ago, this is really a good, good testimony. And I think I still maintain the separation of powers argument that this committee talked about a month ago. And this amount of committee bills versus the policy-making branch of government, I think is very telling. Thank you.
Good. Well, I'll be happy to help you however I can.
We'll be asking you to come back.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Thank you. Good
day. Mr. Warner?
Chair Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Officer, and I'm getting the written response to the questions. I think I might have gotten one or two less questions, but you've got the response to those, and I'll go ahead and go through those, and then any questions you have, I'll certainly be happy to elaborate on anything. The first question is one I think it was asked of everyone. It's the additional staff. Needs, potential staff needs for the proposed session structure. My read on what we'll need is that in the immediate term, looking at the next calendar year, as we look at the February pilot special session, I don't think we have an immediate need for a position. I think that I would envision a number of kind of annual activities that a revenue committee would do, such as looking at federal policy, reconnect. We may change our approach to reconnect, given that you'll be meeting annually, and that drives a lot of the income tax discussion. We typically, given the complexity of tax bills, often have some adjustments to make on those bills. And of course, the number one thing that would occupy our time would be if our revenue forecast is off, way off, either high or low, would I suspect lead to some type of revenue package that we would be fully committed to. I would see that as, you know, if we do have a lot of time focused on that, I potentially could cut into our interim activities, and that certainly was the case in 2002. We do have some long-term kinds of things going on. We spend a lot of time looking at the overall structure of the revenue system, trying to develop tax reform proposals. We've had a series of channels going on that look at not only the state system but also the local revenue system, the property tax system, and the myriad of local taxes we have. So we've spent a lot of time on that, and we spent a lot of time on background issues. So that would be the potential casualty if we end up spending a lot of time in an annual session. Over the longer term, I do see, and I've been in this position for 8 years now, and I do see a growing need for carving out another economist position over time. This would probably accelerate that trend. We do spend a lot of increasing amount of our time in some what I call non-tax revenue areas. Those areas would include fees. Now, Ken mentioned that the fees tied to the budget are clear division of labor, and that works well, I think. But we also get a lot of really policy-driven fee discussion. We have a major document filing fee under consideration now in Senate Revenue Committee. School impact fees, system development charges are pretty complex in terms of their analysis. We've seen issues around bond finance. Lottery, of course, is now over $1 billion and a major issue, a major revenue source, and also a series of local government issues. So I would see that potentially down the road as something to consider. If you'd like to see a higher quality and more comprehensive staff analysis in those kinds of areas. In terms of our staff salaries and whether they're competitive, we did participate in the legislative administration salary survey, and in general it showed that our economist positions are competitive with respect to comparable positions within the state. We didn't get any interstate comparisons. We did lose one of our I thought very good young staff to Washington, but I don't think that was really a salary issue. There seemed to be fairly comparable. The one area where we're clearly not is with the federal government. We have tried to do a little bit of recruiting on economists within the federal government, and their salaries are quite a bit out of line with ours. We've argued that it's a lower cost of living, but we haven't had any success in recruiting at that level. The biggest reason why we've lost staff, and we've lost two mid-career staff, I'm not including retirements, but two mid-career staff, really due to hours, working hours, and commuting requirements. That's been the most difficult thing in terms of our staff recruiting. Our space adequacy, I would say yes. We have shared in discussions with the Legislative Fiscal Office on the tech position. We certainly would agree with kind of the direction they're going and would like to participate with them, thinking position perhaps 25% devoted to revenue issues. We have several fairly complex software packages we use for our revenue analysis, and some expertise there would really help us rather than just having kind of our economists on the fly trying to learn those things. That position, however, and any additional position we would have, we don't have the staff, and I think we're basically in the same position the fiscal office is in. We have adequate staff or adequate space for the staff we have now, but we don't really have any room to expand within the existing confines of the office. Training needs of the office and training budget, that's on the back side of my handout. The training needs, our training budget is roughly about $4,000 per biennium. Keep in mind that we are relatively small. We have myself and four economists, so basically that's a budget for five professional economists. We have typically attended three conferences in the past. There are two at an annual level, the Revenue Estimating Conference put on by the Federation of Tax Administrators, annual meeting of the National Tax Association. Those are located various places around the country. And then I've had a long involvement with the Pacific Northwest Regional Economic Conference, and that's a regional conference, and we try to send one or two of our people to that. We have been restricted in recent years by budget shortages and just timing, especially the special session. We were unable to attend conferences at all for a couple of years. We would like to do more of that. We were able to in this last year, for example, the Revenue Estimating Conference fortunately was in Portland, and that, of course, was allowed us to send more folks. But that's an area, I think, if you look at training needs, that is, I think, the biggest bang for the dollar for our professional staff because their ability to interact with their contemporaries in other states. If you look at the kinds of issues that are dealt with at the conferences I have listed there, then invariably are issues that we deal with here. And that other, so the experiences of other states are very valuable. The final question on the advantages and disadvantages of merging legislative revenue and legislative fiscal. I've thought about this issue for a while, different perspectives. For example, when I went over to when I was first hired as state economist by what was then the executive department, the state economist's office, Office of Economic Analysis as it's called now, was in the budget management division, so a similar kind of combination of what we would have here. And shortly after that, within 3 or 4 years, it was broken out and created as a separate office, such as we have between legislative revenue and legislative fiscal. So I kind of see those advantages and disadvantages from that perspective. Another thing, I know this issue has come up. I know Mike Stinson was asked this when Jim Scherzinger left in 1998, whether this was a good idea. Mike was opposed to it at that time. But I know this issue has been around. I've listed what I would think could be some potential advantages. Certainly on paper, I think you can potentially have more coordination and communication. I do agree with what Ken said. I think we have worked hard to try to have communication. It doesn't always work, and we have had some problems on occasion. I think more just in due to the fact that we're focused on our workload, and it is an extra step. But I think we've historically done a pretty good job in doing that. There may be some potential to reduce overlap of duties. And I do periodically run into members that are confused over, they'll call fiscal office about an income tax question, or they'll call me or my office about what's clearly a budget question. So there is, I think, particularly among newer members, some confusion about roles and responsibilities. I would see some potential disadvantages. I think that you do have a different structure, or really a different culture, in the fiscal office, and I would argue this would be true in budget management as well. You have a structure that's really driven by the governor's budget, and you are driven to producing a document, a thing, and it's a more structured kind of environment. On the revenue side, we're dealing more with revenue issues. We don't have a governor's budget per se to deal with. We do the revenue impact estimates. The executive branch doesn't really do that, doesn't have responsibility. So we have a lot more open-ended kind of responsibilities than the budget office does. I think that there's danger of creating a larger, less manageable office. I would see, if you were to go in this direction, probably a need to take what would be the combined offices and divide them up into divisions. For example, a budget division, a revenue division, and perhaps a performance measure audit type division, all within that framework of an expanded fiscal office. And I think that it would lead to some greater centralization within the legislature, and that would be something for you to judge whether that would create problems or not. So that's my comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Warner. Are there any questions or comments? Well, okay. I guess we are at the appointed hour for adjournment. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.